Welcome to Source from the Sofa podcast. Aaron, as well as myself, Rome, are in for tonight's episode. We're recording Monday night, November 4th, the eve before our general election for president, and right after the Monday night football game where Buccaneers could have, in my opinion, pulled out a victory against the Kansas City Chiefs, and Kansas City Chiefs to much of my dismay, pull off another victory. They're 8-0, undefeated. Somehow, some way, they find a way to keep on winning. And I'm not going to hate on that, but I do hate the Chiefs. Mahomes, he looked okay. He had some really cool throws. Did they really need DeAndre Hopkins? You know, he looked really good today. There you have good chemistry, which is even more fucking frustrating. But let's start from there, Monday Night Football, and then we'll recap the rest of Week 9, which was, I don't know, kind of interesting, kind of uneventful. All the favorites, I believe, most of them actually, won this past week.
One dog outright winner, and the one you least suspect, too, really.
Yeah, most definitely. So let's get with it. So now Bucks 4-5. Baker Mayfield, all his weapons are out, but he looked pretty good today. You know, it was wet conditions. They seemed like they had a pretty good handle. They almost came in clutch, but they couldn't come through as Kansas City scored, what was it, like the two last touchdowns, right? Unanswered.
Well, yeah, Kansas City was down 17-10, got two unanswered touchdowns. Tampa comes back.
Ties it
scores
up.
That touchdown with what, 20, 25, 23 seconds, whatever it was there.
Yeah.
You know, Rome, we were talking about this before we went on the pod earlier this afternoon while we were breaking down weekend games and discussing what we were going to bring up on the show. And 2-point conversion, end of game, came up. We saw two teams this week, Patriots and now add Tampa Bay, get touchdowns essentially on the last couple of seconds of a game, failed to go for two. And both end up on the losing end. Going forward, I think you're going to see coaches looking at this, especially when you're on the road. You've got momentum. You're not expected to win. Tampa, I mean, they're fighting for their season. Given the way they lost, I mean, Atlanta's win over the Cowboys looks even more big, given that they've already beaten Tampa twice. They're 4-0 in the division. Now they got they're 6-3. Tampa's 4-5. Tampa's banged up. You mentioned, Rome, the schedule is going to be brutal, brutal coming up against the 49ers off a bye at 4-4. And the only way the 49ers get in the playoffs is to win the division. They got no choice. Whoever wins the division is going in from that division. Tough loss for Tampa, man, for sure.
Yeah, Niners are primed to go on a run, as we discussed off air. But Bucks, man, ever since their 51-27 victory over the Saints, they lost a tough game against the Ravens. Honestly, they were coming back, but they almost had a chance to sent it to overtime. Tough loss against the Falcons, their second defeat of the year, so they're done. And then now a tough loss against the Chiefs. Now they're 4-5. They were 4-2. And look at them now. Their over-under, I think, was, man, I think it was like 8 or 9. Was something like that. I had them winning the division.
It was anywhere from as low as 7.5 to 8.5, 9.
Yeah, and tough stretch coming up. It's going to be, actually, you know what? There is some promise, actually. After the 49ers.
They got a tough schedule, dude.
Giants, Panthers.
That Giants is not an easy game.
It's not. Raiders, Chargers, that's tough.
Cowboys. At Cowboys.
Cowboys, what's going to be left by then?
That's true. But, I mean,
Panthers and then Saints. It might be blessings, but, man, they might only get like 4 wins left in this
schedule. I mean, I'm looking at their schedule right now.
That's like an 8-19 right there.
I see 4 games that they should win, which would get them to 8.
Yeah.
I mean, they should beat Carolina, Raiders, Vegas, Carolina again, and New Orleans at home. Right now, I mean, Mike Evans should be back for the Charger game, but you know the Chargers are going to be in the playoff hunt, and that's going to mean a lot for them. Cowboys, what are they going to have to play for? Who knows? Dak, who knows how long he's going to be out? $60 million. He's got no reason to even force himself back. Pin him on the IR. He's done for the year.
He's done.
He's cashing in the check.
Oh man, I love that meme that was going around. He got caught in the sidelines saying "We effing suck." At least he knows it.
Yeah,
I think everyone knows it except Jerry Jones.
I think Jerry knows it, but he doesn't want to pull back the curtain and look at what the Cowboys have become under his watch. Because not only is he the owner, he's a general manager. So that's even a double tough pill to swallow.
I heard somewhere on the radio today where the Cowboys are today, they might be where the Raiders were when Al Davis was in the tail end of his career. You know, hanging on, just old man syndrome, just being stubborn, running the team his way, running to the ground, basically. And Jerry's doing the same fucking thing. It must click when you're 81 or 82. If I'm still running things, Aaron, when I'm 81, 82, just take the keys away from me and just kick me off the cliff. Yeah.
I mean, if I make it to 81 or 82, that might be a miracle in itself. So,
I know.
But yeah, that's a good take. You know, I didn't think about the Raiders and all that, but
no.
Wasting money on Dak Prescott. We've talked about this a lot. I don't know so much on the pod, but off air, I wouldn't have given Dak $60 million because he's just not a Super Bowl winning quarterback. And now, honestly, given where the Cowboys are at, if I'm the Detroit Lions, I'm calling up Jerry and I'm saying, what do you want for Micah Parsons? Give me Micah Parsons. What do you want for him? I'm calling up and I'm inquiring about him. You lost Aiden Hutchinson. Detroit's dominating. Cowboys could use another first or second round pick. I'm making the call and seeing if Jerry's interested in trade.
Knowing Micah Parsons, Jerry might trade him to his own radio station and get that guy that he cussed out a few weeks ago and put him on there full time there, since that's all Micah's been doing anyways. Mm-hmm. Rating top 10 quarterbacks. Doesn't even put his own quarterback on there, by the way, if you ever caught his pod.
Hey, I got to agree. Dak, don't make the list, man.
Yeah, you don't make the list.
Anyways,
back to Bucks. Tough loss, man. Tough loss. We'll see how they end up. But we did say after this week, week 9, we're going to find out maybe like which one of these 3-4, 3-5 teams might make a second half push. I thought we saw a couple that might make that push in the second half of the season. But before we get there, though, we kind of talked about this on the phone, and you're right. 1/4 of the league only has 2 wins, which is pretty impressive. Granted, like typically like the top pick of every year, the draft typically only have like 2 or 3 wins anyways. So honestly, there's like some parity this year. The fact that everyone has 2 wins already is good, but I can't remember when was the last time we've been able to knock out this many teams. Just let's scratch them off for the playoffs. They're not making it.
Yeah, I mean, 9 teams with 2 wins, and then you've got a lot of teams right there at that 4-5, 4-4 kind of bubble.
Yeah.
Tampa's there. I mean, the Bears, big loss going to 4-4, basically ruining their chances in that NFC North, because the next worst record is, you know, 6-3 Green Bay. So they got to play them twice. They're not going to beat the Packers twice.
Here, I'm pulling up real quick. You know, by the way, tough loss against the Packs, and they're still 6-3. They're still looking nice. Vikings etch out a win. Yeah, man.
Yeah, I mean, Packers' schedule's been brutal. They got 3 losses here against the Eagles in Brazil, a game that could have went either way. You know, Love got hurt the drive before the Hail Mary, where they brought in, you know, Malik Willis to throw that Hail Mary that ended up being a sack. And then you've got the loss against the Lions this week. And then when Jordan Love came back after missing 2.5 games against Minnesota, they lost that game. So Packers have had a brutal schedule. Give them a lot of credit being 6-3 going into a bye. I think given all the injuries that they've had in the defensive secondary and a Jordan Love, I'm happy and thrilled if you're a Packer fan going into the bye 6-3. No doubt about that.
So we'll save like the Bears segment when Jason gets back wherever he is. Sources are that he's still stuck in Arizona. He attended the game with his wife. Still finding information.
He's at Joshua's Tree, man. I've heard there's been sightings of him at Joshua's Tree. So he might be making his way through the desert there sometime. There's nothing like the desert to clear a man's thoughts, and Jason needs that for sure right now.
He's doing his own ayahuasca trip to find a meaning behind the Bears' offseason moves, whether that was keeping Eberflus. You can't spell loss without Eberflus.
And he's just maybe taking a quote from the Bears owner, the real Bears owner, Aaron Rodgers.
Aaron Rodgers,
embrace the darkness.
Embrace the darkness, baby. Embrace the darkness.
So
Which, dude, like, it's so tough being a Bears fan. And I, you know, there's Ryan Russillo. I'm a big fan of Ryan Russillo. He declared himself a Bears fan this year, which no one fucking knew. Bill Simmons didn't know. No one knew. And he came on his podcast like, oh, by the way, I'm a Bears fan now. I really believe the hype on Caleb Williams, all this stuff, blah, blah. Me personally, I kind of don't see all the hype between Caleb Williams. I didn't like his senior year. I thought he was like up and down, kind of emotional, et cetera, et cetera. After that loss against Washington, Russillo's on his pod. He's like, I can't do it anymore. I'm out. I'm out. I don't want to be a Bears fan anymore. It just took him 7 weeks to fucking go in and out.
Well, for sure, he's off the bandwagon after that loss against Arizona.
You know what? I just got word Jason's going to join us in 5 minutes. So we can come back on the Bears topic. But yeah, it's going to be really good. We'll save that in the Bears.
Yeah, for sure, man. I mean, Jason just he can take the floor from there.
Nice. But here, let's go back to the two lost teams. So in the NFC East, we got the Giants. We already crossed them off a few weeks ago because they're just terrible. I'm pretty confident with crossing out the Cowboys, but they are 3-5. They are not statistically out. It's just a tough division.
Yeah, they're done, man. They're done. I mean, Washington and Philly are in. Yeah, they're done.
NFC West, we'll get back to that later. That's
whoever wins the division is gonna take the cake, man.
Yeah, for sure. NFC North, as we discussed, pretty tight. NFC South, it's a bad division, you know?
It's Atlanta's, man. It's Atlanta's to lose.
Panthers and Saints. I think we already crossed out the Saints. I wasn't sure. We did cross out the Panthers, but nice win from them, though, by the way. They got homeboy fired from the Saints. So,
yeah,
farewell, buddy.
You can't go from beating this team in week one, 47-13, to being 2-0 to dropping 7 straight and not really being competitive in a lot of these games.
Yeah, other 2-7 or 2-win teams. We got the AFC East, Dolphins, and Patriots. I liked watching Drake May play this weekend, man. They got their quarterback. And you're right. They should have went for the 2-point conversion. I don't know if you want to break that down for us.
Yeah, I mean, they should have went for two, man. I mean, yeah. Drake May just running around back there, held the ball for like 12 seconds, throws it up to Stevenson. They get the touchdown. Like you mentioned, Rome, they're not expected to win. You just made a play that no one expects you to make. You got nothing to lose. I mean, you got your supposed franchise quarterback, and Drake May looks like he may be that guy. I mean, it's early. Let's not jump on the bandwagon yet, but that's he's showing signs.
To be fair, that's what also dang it. Who was a quarterback 2 years ago? I already forgot.
Oh, Mac Jones.
Mac Jones, yeah.
Yeah. You know, Mac Jones, the best highlight he's got now is they're showing him warming up when the Jaguars are down 22-0. And, you know, it's like, hey, they can make a quarterback switch. Like, nah, just Mac Jones keeping the arm loose just in case this game gets a 30-0.
Most definitely. So, Pats 2-7, but at least they got their quarterback. I didn't think Dolphins were good anyways, but they look pretty competitive the last 2 weeks with Tua. They might make some noise.
Dolphins are 2-6. If they had Tua full time, they'd be 4-4 right now.
Possibly.
But we'll see. They got the Rams on Monday Night Football. That should be a good game here in SoFi.
It's going to be really good. Unfortunately, the Rams are heating up at the right time. They got weapons back. Puka, aside from their ejection, they're looking solid. Raiders at 2-7. I think that's a bad head coaching hire. They look lost more than ever before. They just fired their offensive coordinator. Their offensive line coach,
quarterbacks coach.
They don't even know who's going to be calling plays, and they have an off week right now.
Yeah, I believe they have an off week. Do they? Let's look. I mean, it's a good week to fire. Yeah, they do have a bye. I mean, I did hear the name Norv Turner. You remember the name Norv Turner? They may bring him in to call plays or be in offense analysis. His son is rumored to be taken over to call the plays, Scott Turner. Scott Turner, I think, last called plays at the University of Illinois. Maybe Jason can clarify that when he comes on in here in a bit. Out of Joshua's tree and the Wi-Fi signal's working.
Yeah. By the way, man, most of these 2-win teams are on the AFC side. So pretty crazy. We also got Browns, Titans, Jaguars. Pretty rough. But Browns, man, they came back down to earth with a little Jameis Winston. with the three interceptions. Probably he should have got some of those last week anyway. So,
hey man, all those crab legs, man, a little butter on those fingers with the balls a little slippery coming out, man.
Exactly. But now we got Jason on the line. Jason, what's up, man? How you doing?
You there, Jason? A little technical difficulty still? Give us a thumbs up if you're ready to go. I don't think he's ready yet, man.
I don't think he's ready yet. But, no, he's not ready. Yeah, all these teams, though, most of them are from the AFC. So the AFC is really weak this year. It's pretty bad.
It's got some bad teams in the AFC. Yeah, like really you mentioned. Teams.
It's top heavy and bottom poor. What should we talk about before Jason comes on? Should we just wait?
I mean, look, we covered, you know, Lions. I mean, Lions are looking really strong, and Commanders. You know, we talked about the AFC. The NFC has a lot of good teams, a lot of good depth, especially that NFC North. Lions 7-1, Packers 6-3, Vikings 6-2, and the Lonely Bears. I mean, 4-4. I hate to say it, 4-4. Usually in a playoff hunt, but things aren't looking good for the Bears. They do have the Patriots this weekend. Drake May, Caleb Williams.
I don't like that matchup, man. Not liking it.
It is the Bears' home game. The Bears have not lost a home game this year. I mean, they did play the game in London against the Jaguars, were considered the home team, so they're yet to win a road game. They got a good defense, the Bears. Got to think that gets going against a bad Patriots kind of offense that just doesn't have any weapons on the outside to challenge these guys. Drake May's going to be running for his life a lot, that's for sure.
Yeah. One thing about the Vikings, they had a pretty big win. Indianapolis, still pretty tough. Joe Flacco did not have a great game. I know we were like back and forth about Richardson. I still think Richardson should be getting reps, but he has been playing like shit. You got a kind of like the good and the bad with Sam Darnold. He looked sharp. He moved around the pocket. Did have two interceptions, but he also had three TDs, almost 300 yards. Had some nice throws, some clutch throws. It's kind of like a weird bag, but them being 6-2, them being like the surprise team kind of threw off the Bears' chances of making the playoffs, in my opinion. But with the Vikings, though, I think at the very least they go 500 the rest of the year and they're going to get to 10-11 wins.
Yeah, I mean, the Vikings, they got a stretch coming up here. I think three straight road games looking at it. We got at Jacksonville, at Tennessee, at Chicago. Jacksonville's not, it's not going to be an easy game.
No.
Jaguars, every one of their losses this year, I believe, has been by one score, or except for maybe one in London. So yeah. They play tough games. Tennessee's not very good, but they do have a good pass defense. And at Chicago, divisional games, we always know those are tough. Then they get Arizona, tough. Atlanta, Chicago at home, at Seattle, Green Bay, Detroit. Yeah, I mean, they're 6-2. I think 10-11 wins is probably about right for them, barring any crazy injuries. But Sam Darnold's got to stop turning the ball over. I mean, too many turnovers, especially down there in the red zone. Referees have been missing some big-time hits on him for sure. You know, obviously the face mask that wasn't called the Thursday night before against the Rams. They were likely still going to lose that game given the time and timeouts they had left.
Likely, but they still had a shot.
Yeah. I mean, it would have been a 15-yard penalty and you move it out. A lot still would have had to happen. The odds of winning were still low, but you don't want to see a team lose a game like that. And then, you know, literally a 340-pound defensive nose tackle just punches him in the face. Fumbles the ball, gets scooped and scored for a touchdown. The only touchdown the Colts had in the game. And they basically almost tripled the yardage on him. So, yeah, I mean, Joe Flacco, you said, you know, is he the quarterback that's going to be there for the Colts? I give him another start. I think they're going to upset Buffalo this weekend, or at least give Buffalo a good run for their money down there at Indy. So we'll see what happens.
Nice. Let's take a quick little break. When we come back, hopefully we'll get Jason on the line, and he'll give us the 411 on the Chicago Bears and the return of the panic meter. We haven't seen that in a few weeks. We'll be back shortly. We are back with Jason. back from Arizona. He was live Bears visiting the Cardinals, and man, 29-9. Didn't see that one coming. I picked the Cardinals in an upset, but did not see that fucking point discrepancy. Jason, I imagine you're pretty pissed. We exchanged some text messages. Twitter's going off. More so about like the Saints over the weekend. So it kind of overshadowed your Bears loss, I think, at least like, you know, for everyone outside of Chicago, at least. I saw that you had a Fire Eberflus post on IG earlier today. Wow. One of a couple Chicago Bears stuff. I was just telling Aaron how Ryan Russillo declared himself a Bears fan, but then jumped off after last week's loss against Washington. He's like, I'm done. I can't do it anymore. You guys broke a new Chicago Bears fan within 8 weeks, and here you are, lifelong Bears fan. I think I sent you some memes of what it means to be a Bears fan. Pretty hilarious stuff, but how you feeling, man? Like, what's give us a 4-1? Like, what'd you see in that game live in Arizona? Opinions, etc.
Well,
should they change play calling duties on the offensive side of the ball?
Well, I mean, how I'm feeling, I could see, you said Russillo, was it? Came to be a Bears fan and then off the bandwagon that quickly. Yeah, I mean, this is what life as a Bears fan is like, hoping that Caleb Williams was going to be kind of the, you know, the break in this cycle that the Bears have offensively. But we talked in the season preview, and I don't think it's any of a unique take around the Chicago Bears, but them not parting ways with Matt Eberflus at the end of last season, knowing they were going to get the first overall pick, drafting in, you know, Caleb Williams, you know, bringing another new quarterback in, and not having a new coaching staff in place for that, there was going to be questions around, is this going to be the right fit? So this will be the third time we've talked about it, the third time in three quarterbacks that the head coach, you know, was drafted a quarterback in his basically lame duck season and then potentially getting dismissed. And now this rookie quarterback in his second year is going to have to learn a new offense. So happened to Trubisky, happened to Fields, now potentially Caleb Williams. So, Rome, I think you had Eberflus in your hot seat early in the year. I don't know, maybe after they lost to the Colts game when we did kind of your first round of top five quarterbacks. But this was the concern, I think, all year going into Chicago. Was Eberflus going to be the coach? No, he can put a defense on the field, you know, potentially a Super Bowl caliber defense, I think I called it maybe last week. But that Super Bowl caliber defense wasn't there on Sunday, which I saw. And, you know, I think the most demoralizing play in that game, as bad as the offense was, which I'll get to that in a second, the touchdown at the end of the first half to DeMercado, this was like 56 yard touchdown.
Yeah. Oh my God. That was so good.
So when you pair that with losing to the Hail Mary the week prior, and now you allow this just lapse in defense where if the Bears stop that play, they're down 14-9 going into the half and getting the ball to start the second half. But now you deflate your entire team down 21-9 going into the half, and the game was really lost, I think, at that point. Like, the momentum was completely gone. Now 2 weeks in a row, the strength of your team, the defense, has let you down in a big way. And offensively, you brought up the play calling and stuff. Yeah, this is every Bears offensive coordinator, I think, in my entire lifetime. You know, the scheme, the game plan, whatever you're calling it, not working. And you can't get the running game going. Aaron and I mentioned this several times with Swift. Like, they run outside. They run outside. You have no running game up the middle. Everything that they're doing in the passing game with Caleb Williams doesn't click. It's very disjointed, you know. And even, I think, you know, Aaron has watched a lot of Charger games. In person, I say Keenan Allen, I think, dropped a first down ball that was like right through his hands. And one of the bigger sins 2 weeks in a row. You have Cole Kmet, which I think is top 10 tight end talent-wise in the game. Didn't even get a target in this game. And then I think it's 2 weeks in a row he didn't get a target, at least didn't get a catch. So you have all these weapons offensively. You do a lot of things offensively that are take forever to develop. And Caleb Williams, was he sacked 5 times in this game? I can't even remember what it was, but
I don't remember. But
this is Arizona was a bottom tier defensive line from a pass rush going into this game, and you allowed, you know, this defensive line, which no really heavy hitters. The top player on this Arizona
six total sacks. They had six total sacks.
All right. So you play a bottom third league defensive line, allow 6 total sacks. Arizona's best player, Buda Baker, is in the secondary, and you can't get anything on this team that, you know, has given up a ton in the passing game. And it was just bad all around, Rome. So,
now I know the first half looked pretty bad. It was 7-6, and then everything changed the last 3 minutes. That's when Benson had a 1 yard run, made it 14-6. You guys came back and got a field goal, 26 seconds left, 9-14. Pretty good going to the half, right? But 26 seconds left. Murray had a run and like a pass, and then all of a sudden, DeMarcado with the 53-yard run, which that kind of deflated the whole game. Like, Bears looked flat. Bears looked flat out fucking flat, and it seemed like that loss, that hangover loss, was hanging over. Oh no, that loss was hanging over.
The Bears left their mojo over there in London, man.
Yeah,
ever since the bye week,
bye week was not good. I've never seen a bye week have opposite effect on a football team. Like, this might be a first.
I mean, 100%. I did the pod air last week, Rome. I don't know. It could be the hidden episode
It's like the Bears' offense, man.
Hit or miss. I don't know. It's hit or miss. But a lot of criticism in our last recorded pod of me taking 30 minutes in the Bears and 20 minutes in Formula One. But that literally was my entire Sunday watching the Brazilian Grand Prix in the morning.
I missed it. Incredible race.
We'll put that to the side for now.
Wasn't it rain delay?
It was qualifying was delayed, but and then had a rain at the race, which kind of played into the result. But I'll be to say a lot of Formula One and Bears talk in the last pod that was recorded. So, but in that pod talking about the Bears, you know, this the best coaches come out of bye weeks, you know, and basically almost guarantee a win. And last week, not only did they let that win slip through because of the Hail Mary, but offensively, basically nothing to be found. And so you have this demoralizing loss. How are you going to respond? And the offense was just as bad, like nothing going on the entire time. So,
yeah,
you know, this looks like any other Bears offense. Luke Getsy, the Bears offense coordinator last 2 years, already fired from the Raiders. So, and this basically looks like that exact same offense. So, I don't know. It's new to people that are watching the Bears, but this is the exact same type of team you see. And I've said it on this pod. We've talked about with Aaron. Eberflus should have been let go last year. Ben Johnson should have been the hire. And that's what should happen this year. And I have no confidence that the Bears actually do that.
Yeah. Well, he's not going to get fired in the season, so
no,
Bears never do that, right?
They never do that. So it's going to be we're going to stick with it. Now you're going to play a
we'll see, man.
How many
if the Bears can continue to shit the bed? They'll make an in-season firing.
We'll see. Well,
I mean, it's the same last year with the Chargers, bro. Spaniel's team owner never made an in-season firing, and then
that's
you just
true.
You just get your ass beat on TV one game and. But all of a sudden, shit
had to happen.
Dude.
Yeah, people were loud.
Yeah,
on that one,
I will say I've given thoughts. I think in the pod around my White Sox and their owner Jerry Reinsdorf. So,
a little bit. Yeah,
the Bears ownership is owned by the McCaskey family, which is passed down from the Bears founder George Halas. But George McCaskey became chairman of the Bears in 2011. At the end of the 2012 season, at 10-6, the Bears missed the playoffs. And the first head coach business for George McCaskey was to fire Lovie Smith. 2012. 10-6 season, but missed the playoffs. Since then, 2 years, they hired Mark Trestman, 2 years and fired. Hired John Fox. Three years. Either. Basically no winning seasons, fired. Hired Matt Nagy. Had one playoff, or two playoff appearances, excuse me. But had the infamous double doink. Didn't win a playoff game. And then hired Matt Eberflus. So the original sin of this franchise, of hiring or firing the head coach that took you to a Super Bowl off a winning season, but wasn't good enough at that time. Now this owner has done this and basically made all wrong hires from a head coaching perspective since then.
I'm going to play devil's advocate, and I'm so sorry. To be fair, Lovie Smith never came through in prime time, though. You know, he got close, got that. He just couldn't take that next step. And I think you guys were pretty frustrated with that, right, at the time?
I mean, them going 10-6 and making the playoffs, there was offensive turmoil. So, same thing a decade ago when you're talking about the offense, because we had Mike Martz coming in as offensive coordinator and, you know,
throw the ball 80% of the time and run it 20. And
so there was wild stuff then at that point, too. But, okay, this was the head coach that legitimately would beat the Green Bay Packers. Lovie Smith is the last Bears head coach that had success against the Packers.
Lovie Smith was the guy that came in and said, I don't care if I go 0-15 or 0-14 against the rest of the league. I want to go 2-0 against Green Bay.
Right.
Yeah. That was his attitude.
Knew the importance of that rivalry to the Bears. And no head coach since has done that. So it's just been, if you were going to fire him, you better have, you know, a better track record sense of head coaches and whatnot. So I will go back, Rome. And we're going into way too much Bears history. I have liked Ryan Poles, the general manager of the Bears. I think he's put them, for the most part, constructed a right roster. But even his hiring, when they hired him, he got to pick the head coach for Eberflus for the most part. But he basically got the finalists. So they started interviewing head coaches before Eberflus even – I'm sorry, before Ryan Poles even fully got the job. And then once he got the job, these were your finalists of the three he had to choose from. And ended up choosing Eberflus. So the full coaching search was in Harris. And
that's
a microcosm of what the Bears are as organization. Everything's one step behind. And they're going to do it again with Caleb Williams here. Because if they get rid of Eberflus like they should, we're going to start another second year with Caleb Williams. And I don't think they're going to fire him, because at least during the season. Because, hey, at 4-4... most media people say this is where the Bears are going to be. They're going to play a bad Patriots team coming up. You know, they maybe muscle out of victory versus them. And now, hey, we're 5-4 going against the division. It's still winnable. And then maybe the Bears are adding around 500. But I have seen no progression offensively. And that's the biggest question. What are you going to do to develop Caleb Williams? And my other counterpart, I don't know if I necessarily believe this, but I've vaunted the Bears defense of what Eberflus has to do. The biggest question mark you could say, is it Eberflus on defense or was it the acquisition of Montez Sweat? Because the Bears became a top defense of actually 1 year ago when they got Montez. Wasn't there this Sunday. And you saw this was the worst defensive performance the Bears have had and probably in the last year with no Montez in the lineup.
Yeah. I mean, I'm looking at the Bears' schedule.
Yeah, me too. I'm looking at it, too, and I'm thinking,
I mean, they should beat the Patriots, but they could lose their next six following that. Green Bay, Minnesota, Detroit, 49ers, Minnesota, Detroit, Seattle, Green Bay.
I think
they'll be underdogs in every one of those
Minnesota.
Games.
Yeah.
They'll be underdogs in every one of those games.
So in year three of the Eberflus tenure, this is the stuff Sunday, Rome, as you're texting me, and I'm finding out different things about the different stats around the Bears where they're at in Eberflus. So in the Eberflus era, they're 0-17 on the road on Sundays.
I didn't know that until they did that on the broadcast.
Yeah, they're
fucking amazing.
3-18 on the road overall. They're 2-10 versus the NFC North so far. So that's going into the schedule Aaron's talking about right there. And then mentioned last week, whether it aired or not, they have four collapsing losses with a 92% win percentage in the fourth quarter. So these are kind of the stats you need to start looking at of what this team's going to be. Potentially wasted this season. You know, we're going to the trade deadline tomorrow there should be at least two players the Bears should be trading. We'll see if they do or not. But it's in bad shape. Bad shape. And we're at where Aaron and I were so bullish on this division, which I still think is good.
Still good.
But the Bears, as much as I wanted to put them up there, they are the worst team in this division, and they have regressed in the past couple weeks.
Yeah. Well, as I was talking to Aaron earlier today, man, like once the Vikings ended up being decent or good, you know, it kind of fucked a lot of plans up. And I was talking about this earlier. I think they'll at the very least go 500 the rest of the way. So, yeah, they kind of pulled a lot of plans. But cool, man. Thank you for the Chicago update. I really appreciate it.
Man, we'll keep it shorter this time. Many complaints about me talking about the Bears too much.
No, it's fair enough. You're a resident Bears fan. I think some other podcast, they had some guy talking about the Cowboys for 20 minutes. So, you know, everyone's got to voice their frustrations. And out of all the coaches that got fired, Dennis Allen got fired.
Yeah, I mean, so. I think he might have been number two at some point on your last power rankings, or maybe he was number one.
He was number one in the beginning of the season, okay. And they had those two wins. You know, we were all thinking like, wow, are the Saints good? Are this a playoff team? And seven straight losses. It's pretty impressive, actually. I love football. I love football. Me and Aaron were talking about earlier how 1/4 of the league has two wins. It's a pretty wild season.
It's been a very, very interesting season. The thing that's kind of startles me so far this season, really the lack of offense overall in the league. I don't know what the stats are just offensively, but I remember we talked about the first couple weeks, scoring's down. And even watching this Monday night football game tonight, you know, what was it, 10-7 for I don't know how long. There was weather conditions and stuff, but, you know, the defense is something that's, I think, really caught up. Where, we, you know, a couple years ago, it's just high-flying offenses, you know, scoring 35, 40-plus points a game. And I think defense has really stepped it up, where things have kind of changed around this league where, man, these are some super tight games defensively, and a lot of these quarterbacks are having a lot of, you know, having a much harder time, you know, getting the ball up and down the field.
Well, don't tell the Lions fans that, because they've been destroying their opponents week in and week out. Same thing with the Ravens.
And they started slow too, but yeah. now that that train is rolling.
Yeah, now they're a Lamborghini taking off. I think biggest loss from this week, I'll just go ahead and say it, might be the Texans to the Jets. Jets finally got that win on Thursday night. We weren't able to talk about that game at all, but big win for the Jets to stay alive, more or less, at 3-6. And then, of course, the Saints outgaining the Panthers by 150 yards in the passing game, or running whatever it was, winning the turnover differential, and still coughing at that game and costing their head coach his job. In other notes, Derek Carr, not really popular in New Orleans, getting called out by Michael Thomas, saying that he throws the ball very dangerously. Whereas
he's a career ender. Is that the kind of the term he's using over there?
Yeah. What's that guy?
Olave got hurt, right?
Olave got, it was a bad throw. Yeah, he didn't do him any favors, but yeah, I'll just leave it like that. I will reveal my new top power eight, I guess, late in the week. I guess I could talk about last week really quickly.
Yeah.
No.
Last week was Lions at number one, Chiefs number two, which we talked about this fucking game. Did Chiefs fucking win? Luckily, again, it's complete utter bullshit. Ravens were at number three, Bills at number four, Pack were at five, Texans were at number six, Commanders were at number seven, and Vikings were at number eight. So we'll have a little bit of reshuffling, at least in the bottom half of those rankings, come Thursday. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll talk some college football. We're going to review some of Aaron's college football games of the week from week 10. some upsets, some people that got eliminated from the playoffs for sure. And before we get into that, actually, it's part of Aaron's games of the week anyways. Let's start from the bottom. We posted on Instagram, at least. I don't think we posted on X. We did post Aaron's picks for college football and the NFL on X. But UCLA, Nebraska, this is why you don't want to have more than two teams that you root for, because when this happens, it makes it really fucking tough. I did not enjoy it, but I'm really happy for my UCLA Bruins. Looking really tough, man. Deshaun Foster, new coach, learning the ropes, really seasoned assistant coaches, lots of NFL experience. Whatever you're doing, homie, whatever you're doing, this UCLA team, the baby blue, for the first time in a long time, they look gritty. They look tough. They look like they want to punch people in their fucking faces, and I'm all for it, man. That Nebraska, they're going to be fine. They got a great quarterback. I don't know. We've been saying this for a few years, though. Maybe they're not fine. They're kind of falling off
again.
They're
not fine, bro. Nebraska hasn't been to a bowl game since, what, like 2015?
Yeah.
And this was the game to get bowl. They win against UCLA. They get bowl eligible for the first time in like 8 years.
Yeah, I don't know what Rome's talking about here. Like we get the this gets UCLA to 3-5. This is a huge loss for Nebraska.
Good 3-5.
I think you're lucky that in college football it's not like wrestling where there's a triple threat match, because you would have had like UCLA, Nebraska versus Pitt on which team could be more mediocre. I think out of your three of your favorite teams here, but. Man.
Piss on there.
Okay.
No,
we're not your favorite. No. I thought they were on your favorite team list too.
No.
He doesn't care about Pitt.
He doesn't care about Pitt. Okay.
I real root for the Pittsburgh Penguins, you know.
Yeah, it's a bad loss for Nebraska, dude. A bad loss. At home, coming off that slugfest of a game against Ohio State, and then you lay an egg against UCLA. UCLA has looked better, but terrible loss. Chance to get bowl eligible. Not a good loss for Nebraska.
Michigan lost, of course. I got a special clip that I will be posting on Instagram and X regarding Aaron's preseason predictions for Michigan. I fucking hate you. I just want to let you know, Aaron, I fucking hate you.
They're going to lose again this weekend, too.
You get lucky with some of these fucking calls, and you got fucking lucky on this one.
They're going to lose this weekend, too, against Indiana.
They had no business playing Oregon this fucking weekend. And, you know, I'm done watching them for the rest of the year. Texas A&M. South Carolina, they got game-cocked big time. The Cocks came in hard and rammed it down Texas A&M's throat. They're out of the playoffs.
No. I don't think A&M's out yet.
You don't think so?
Nah.
They have to be.
Not out yet, man.
They're not out.
Not out yet.
They got to win the last game of the season, but...
Yeah. They got to win out, but they're not out yet.
They're fucking out.
Aaron, I feel called this one. I was dismissing South Carolina, but he said this was going to be a tough game for them, so I wasn't surprised, because I'll give Aaron the credit on this one. But this was a bad loss, though. I mean, this Texas A&M team looked really good since that loss to Notre Dame, and it wasn't like it was close. Like, South Carolina came out, and they put it on them.
Yeah, South Carolina did put it on them. I thought A&M would win. I knew it was going to be tough. I knew it was going to be tight. I mean, South Carolina's been in a battle in a lot of games this year. They had Alabama on the ropes. Had a few other games that they could have won. But, yeah, they bad loss for Texas A&M, but they're still in the hunt. Still got that game against Texas at the end of the year at Kyle Field. There's going to be some more upsets coming. I got a big upset this weekend in college football.
Well, they had a big one against LSU last week, and they were talking some mad shit. Gamecocks, they've been tough, like them in Wisconsin. You never know what they're going to be doing week in and week out. They're pretty gritty. But, man, they got – Auburn coming up, Texas at the end of the year. They're not going to beat Texas. I know you guys don't like Texas, but I like Texas still. Although I'm kind of jumping off a little bit.
We'll wait and see, man.
All right. Yeah, that was a tough loss, though. Aaron had Pittsburgh. They were 18 at the time, going against number 20, SMU. They got dismantled 48-20. I didn't catch too much of that game, to be honest with you.
I didn't watch it. I just saw the score. I mean, I haven't watched Pittsburgh all year.
It was on your games, though. Those games to watch.
I did see, you know.
You didn't watch your own game?
I don't think anyone even knew.
Keep an eye on.
No one even knew Pitt was undefeated until this week. It was like, oh, they're 7-0.
I knew they were because Roman's been bringing it up for the last 3 weeks
ago. Yeah, I brought. He's like, hey, Pittsburgh, what about
Pittsburgh, and I told him, I said, dude, Pitt sucks. And then I was going to tell you SMU was going to trash him out there in Dallas, and that's exactly what they did.
They destroyed him.
At least Dallas has one good team they can watch this year, and it's not the Cowboys.
One of you guys picked SMU as like a possible at-large berth, right, for the playoff or no?
Right now it's SMU and Miami in the ACC, given if we want to get to Clemson losing against Louisville.
I think you talked about it, Aaron. I don't know if you did it on your official picks, but I know you talked about them before the season.
I think it was one of his like
keep an eye on teams or sleeper teams
yeah. or something like that.
I think sleeper teams, I have teams.
Yeah, he's not wrong on what the ACC title game is, because I was on Clemson knowing they had a bad loss to start the year, but come in. But this is a bad loss to Louisville this week, where it should have lined up with Clemson, Miami in the ACC championship game, and now that's
Clemson's
not even
out. Yeah, Clemson's out. That was a tough loss, man. But Louisville, it wasn't even that close. I think they had a bigger lead going into
Louisville
the fourth quarter.
Louisville pitted on Clemson.
It was a smacking.
They pitted on them. I mean, like, Clemson had been rolling ever since they got rolled by Georgia in week one. They looked good. They've been playing good. I mean, I'm not ready to rule Clemson out of the ACC. There's a lot of things that can still happen, a lot of upsets. But, yeah, it's a bad, bad loss at home, man, for sure.
You had Texas Tech and Iowa State as well on one of your games to watch. I did not see this one. I watched this game. That was a tough loss.
Yeah,
out of the playoff.
I mean, they're still in it. I mean, you got the Big 12 and the ACC are going to get one team in. It's whoever can get to that conference championship and win it. So with Iowa State losing, that gives BYU is the only undefeated team in that conference right now, if I'm not mistaken. So, I mean, BYU, they're looking good. They're looking strong. And they won at SMU. So BYU's legit, man. They're legit. Yeah. They're 8-0, but they're a legit 8-0.
There was another good game. I can't remember. Minnesota and Illinois?
Minnesota won that game.
Oh.
Let's see. I'm looking at the list. Florida-Georgia was actually good until, you know, Florida's quarterback got hurt there. He did the old Dak Prescott and tore the hamstring, so he's out.
Yeah, Georgia's
State-Penn State. You might as well get to that game. James Franklin.
That was tough, man. That was a tough loss.
Penn Who has State it worse, like... the Bears or James Franklin? I'm just curious, Jason.
The Bears got it worse, man. Okay. James Franklin, at least.
He's got it bad, dude.
At least every year, James Franklin gets an undefeated Penn State team to this game every year. You know, it's just going to be one of these years. He's going to get over the hump. But, it ain't great,
Franklin signs after this game. It was active on X. It was active on the Reddit boards. People are not happy. Boosters are not happy with Franklin.
Which is wild. I mean, I get it, but I mean...
It's not too wild. They were trying to kick Harbaugh out of Michigan 5 years ago.
Oh, I know. And Ohio State's trying to get, you know...
Ryan Day.
And he's had like one of the best winning percentages, I think, our head coaches in Ohio State history.
College football's fucking crazy.
Ryan Day in his whole collegiate career coaching at Ohio State's lost to like two teams, Georgia and Michigan.
Yeah.
They just happened to win like three of the last four national championships.
Vandy had a big win against Auburn, 17-7.
Yeah, it was a big win for Vandy, man. Vandy's still talking about themselves being in the playoff hunt if they can win out. I'm not really buying it, but hey, Vandy's an exciting story, man. Thrilled.
It's a good year for them. It's a really good year. They've beat up some really good teams. And
you know, Pavio's now the governor of Alabama. I saw a sign since he beat Auburn and Alabama. He's now the governor of the state.
A lot of piss off people because he is Hispanic. Can't be voting well in Alabama.
I could be wrong, Aaron, but tomorrow is the first official release list for the playoff. So I think as we talk about teams getting eliminated and things like that, I think this initial list at least gives some indication of like how well does the playoff kind of match up to, you know, what the top 25, you know, looks like in the AP poll. And
You know, yeah, I'm looking at the top 25 right now. But yeah,
as we start kind of going down to the wire, I think the pairings for the conference championship games could be interesting, you know, because, I mean, for the SEC, for example, they're probably going to get 3-4 teams in, you know, Big Ten, same thing too, but only two of them are going to play in the title game. So you're going to have some teams potentially getting in without having to play in the championship games.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting, like you said. I mean, what's going to happen? I mean, Indiana should beat Michigan this weekend. I see them going undefeated until they lose at Ohio State. Now Indiana, one loss team. Ohio State's probably going to have one loss. Oregon's going to run the table.
Yeah, I honestly
think Indiana's better than Penn State. And I would pin them in over Penn State. Whether or not the committee, if it comes down to one of those two teams, sees the same, I don't know. So I think it's important for Indiana to show out against a Michigan and against Ohio State. That will be at Ohio State. If they play well there, and even if they lose by 10, I would consider that more impressive than what we've seen from Penn State against Ohio State for the last decade.
Yeah, Indiana, who would have thought? But have they played anybody really good this year? Or is just a luck of the Irish?
Indiana's good, man. This was the first time this year that they were actually behind in the game all season. So their first eight games, they were rolling people. They were down 10-0 against Michigan State and then scored 47 points unanswered.
Yeah, they have Michigan next.
They're going to roll them.
Ohio State, then Purdue.
Yeah, to answer your question, Rome, they really haven't played, I guess, anyone from a rank perspective, but they haven't allowed anyone to really hang around. They've blown everybody out.
I think Nebraska was ranked when they played them, correct?
No, I don't think Nebraska was ranked, but they demolished them.
They destroyed them, yeah, 56-7. I could have sworn Nebraska was ranked that week. Can't remember, though.
Wishful thinking on your part.
They were ranked this year.
At some point, yeah.
Yeah.
They were ranked until they lost at Illinois on Friday night. They started the year out 4-0.
Yeah.
They had a lot of momentum, and then Jason's Fighting Illini kind of, you know, started this losing streak for them.
Yeah, they did.
Been a lot of losing for Illinois-based football teams lately.
Yeah.
Yeah, do you guys want to go ahead and comment on, like, the first playoff ranking or any disagreements, like, top 25?
Well, I think the playoff ranking, like Jason said, is a bit irrelevant. The ACC is getting one team in. It's either Clemson, Miami, or SMU. So whoever gets to that conference title game and wins is in. That's all they're getting, in my opinion.
I don't know. That'd be rough, though, because, I mean, if you look at – if it's like Miami-SMU, Miami's undefeated all year. They lose the ACC title game. You're telling me they're going to keep them out of the playoff? Like, that's what
I would, because how many teams has Miami played in the top 25? Zero. And unlike Indiana – they've come back to win like four games and gotten lucky. So if you told me Indiana, Miami, Miami's obviously a bigger brand. I'd pit in Indiana just because they demolished everybody.
Yeah, that's. I just think that's where the politics are going to get into, you know, this stuff. And with the expanded playoff, I'm still never been a big fan of the conference championship games. Now with the 12-team playoff, I think it's even more irrelevant because I think there was a way to turn these conference championship games into more of a first round of the playoff type thing versus the way they expanded. But now, you know, they're almost to a detriment, you know, to be in the conference championship game. Like if you added like, you know, a hypothetical where, you know, you get two one loss teams and an undefeated team in a conference title game, one of those one loss teams, you know, doesn't play in the conference title game. So they don't take an L and they potentially get in over the team that went to the conference title game and lost, and now they have two losses. Like there's a lot of weird scenarios where these teams are playing an extra game versus a team that doesn't. I think it's going to create a lot of controversy. Yeah. Now, we're talking about the 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th teams versus the 3rd and 4th teams, or however it was in the previous iterations of the playoff. But it's going to create a lot of controversy for how these title games are kind of configured, especially with these expanded conferences where, hey, you know, you mentioned Indiana. Hey, they haven't played really anyone in the conference up in here until like the next to last game of the season from a ranked team perspective.
Well, you bring up a great point, because let's say Indiana loses to Ohio State. Ohio State again plays Oregon and then loses. Now you're saying, like you said, Jason, Ohio State has two losses against Oregon. Hypothetically, Ohio State's one of the top 12 teams that should be in the playoff. But do you say, hey, we're going to pit Ohio State in over Indiana?
Are we going to have playoff controversy again with the 12-team playoff?
Always going.
100%. It doesn't matter how many teams and we put in.
I would agree with Jason. I think they're going to eventually expand the playoff and go, hey, if you make the conference championship, you're automatically in the playoff, college playoff. Whether or not you win or lose, it just going to depend on how your seeding goes. Whether if you win a conference champion, you get a first-round bye, and if you lose, you might have to go on the road.
Who would have thought that?
Because, I mean, Miami, to me, is good.
Yeah.
And, you know, SMU's good. SMU's lost one game to BYU, who may run the table and be the number 3 or 4 seed come playoff time. So, and if they lose to Miami, say, by, like, 3 points, they lost to BYU by 3, Miami by 3. They got 2 losses. Indiana doesn't play in the Big Ten Conference Championship game. Do you pit them in over SMU, who lost to the number 3 and 4 seed in a playoff? That's what's going to come up with the committee here. Yeah, it's going to be some tough decisions.
And not to, not to even put the negative here from my Fighting Irish, though, but they're not in a conference. They don't play a conference championship game. So they don't even have to go through that additional round. Now, the negative for them is they're never going to get a top 4 seed because they can't win the conference at the same time. But there's a lot of goofy things still for how this is kind of just shaken out where, yeah, we're going to have tons of controversy, Romans, because someone's going to be pissed off being the 13th and 14th team out of this.
Yeah. I mean, Notre Dame, the good thing about them not being in a conference is they can lose to Northern Illinois, run the table, and likely still get in. If they were in the Big Ten, I would still see him as one of the 4 top teams there, but you know, you lose 2 games, you're on the outskirts looking out. I mean, Boise State's looking the prettiest of all the pretty teams right now. The rest of their road is easy. I think they're going to match up again in the Mountain West Conference with Washington State for that conference championship. It's looking that maybe UNLV gets back there again. Who knows? But yeah, Boise State, they may be the only sure bet right now that I'm confident outside of Oregon saying they're going to go to a playoff. And ironically, they played earlier in the year.
Well, I don't want to jinx any more of my teams, but I think Notre Dame's a lock into at this point. So their toughest matchup right now is Army. They're playing a terrible Florida State team.
I will say this. They got a guaranteed win coming up this week, Notre Dame. Guarantee it.
That's a Charles Barkley guarantee, huh?
Guarantee. They're going to demolish Florida State.
Man, I've never seen anyone talk so much shit on their own team. You've been like,
hey, didn't you just listen to Jason go 20 minutes on the Bears, dude?
Yeah.
And I was tame today about the Bears, too, man. I had a day and a half to cool off.
He's going back to old ownership groups, man.
I know.
Don't make me go back to Bobby Bowden in the 90s and the wide rights against Miami, bro.
He's like, should have
10 championships right now.
Fuck the last guys, too. Cool.
I mean, Rome, before we go off the air, you might as well, you know, give praise to your Dodgers. I don't know if you forgot about it already.
I haven't forgot about
week,
it.
But
I've been every day.
You might as well just get into it right now.
Fine. I tried making it to the parade on Friday. I was hoping that they're going to win on Wednesday so I can go to the parade on Friday, pick up my daughter. I was in LA. I was in traffic, man. I didn't even bother. I was like, you know what? It's either go to the parade and miss out picking up my daughter from school. I tried picking her up on time to go, but I picked her up. We went and celebrated with other Dodger fans. We caught the tail end. Lots of Dodger fans all over downtown LA. It was busy. Big vibes. Saw a couple of fights break out in a bar. What a fucking surprise. Dodger fans fighting themselves over some bullshit argument. It was really great. Man, some pretty thuggish fans, man. I gotta say, totally forgot about some of the demographics there, but I fucking loved it, man. The parade, of the city, the vibes, that fucking epic. This is like one of the funnest like Octobers overall. Like from like the wild card all the way to the end. Even the Yankee series, you know, it's only 5 games, but it was pretty exciting. A lot of those games were close. Aside from that blowout that the Yankees did, it was a bullpen game. Where Dave Roberts smartly just stuck with 2 or 3 relievers and just kind of had them eat innings, which he did that in every series this playoff season. I'm really impressed, man. I think there's a bounce back year for Dave Roberts as far as like the fan base and his managerial, like how he fits in the historical context of you know, the managerial greats in baseball. I'm really impressed with the Dodgers pulling it out. And the fact that they did it on like on a, you know, when people were injured, right? Ohtani's supposed to come back pitching. It was an up and down year for Betts. Same thing with Freeman. Freeman was like hobbling on one leg. And the fact that they, you know, the bullpen, right? The bullpen carried them throughout the playoffs. They had like fucking 8 starters. They could only use 3 of them in the playoffs. I'm feeling pretty good for the next few years, because if this was an injured year, you know, we're looking pretty good for the next few years to kind of compete for hopefully at least 1 or 2 more World Series. But game 5, one of the most exciting games. I was watching at home. Pretty epic. Judge, happy to see him get a home run. I think it was the first, or it was somewhere in the first 3 innings. I can't remember anymore. It was back-to-back home runs with him. Soto, I believe.
Chisholm.
And then Soto hit a home run as well, right? In the 3rd inning?
No, Stanton hit one.
Stanton, yeah. And then that 5th inning, man. Gerrit Cole was pitching phenomenal, but I didn't watch a lot of Yankee games this year. And so I was unaware with how shitty their fielding was. But apparently this is something that the Dodgers knew very well. So one of the things that they did, and if you're a baseball coach for like little leagues, I think this Dodger team's like a perfect team to show your young little guys, like always running the first base, making that extra effort of fielding the balls, you know, doing like the tiny, you know, baby steps, whatever it is in baseball. Cause that showed out in that 5th inning where it could have been a couple easy outs. Gerrit Cole didn't cover first, but then also the first baseman, you know, was assuming that Gerrit Cole is going to run over that Judge flop in the outfield. That was just his first error of the season. Who'd have fucking known? That's pretty crazy. It's like the, you know, like the baseball gods were just watching over, like, yeah, fuck him, you know, fuck him. Let's take this one away. Just a series of unfortunate events where could have been 3 outs, and all of a sudden you got a couple guys on base in the meat of the order. And then that was it, man. Pretty epic comeback. And then once you were able to take the lead, bringing out, fuck, man, who was it, Aaron?
What a pitcher they brought in, or what?
Yeah.
Oh, Buehler?
Buehler, yep. Man. Buehler as like the closer coming in the 9th inning.
But that's Dave Roberts, man. He's always like those guys. Remember they used to use Scherzer back to close out the Giants when they had that record the win season, man, in the 9th. So that's Dave Roberts' MO, man. Maybe, yeah. Ohtani next year in the 9th.
But I was at that game 5 of that Giants game when he brought out Scherzer, and he was fucking hurt the rest of the playoffs, and that's when your Atlanta Braves fucking ended up taking away. So I fucking remember that, right?
I loved it, man. Yeah. I remember it
too. We were depleted. That 5-game series against the Giants depleted the Dodgers. Like, they were done. Like, that was like a hard-fought game. The Giants were injured too. Like, it was just like a big battle. And then fucking here comes the Braves just sweeping up all the mess and just taking up the championship that year. I fucking remember that. It was easy pickings for you guys after that. Had no one left. Everyone was on wheelchairs. But great World Series. Great playoffs, man. I forgot how much I loved the Major League Baseball playoffs. Besides that, I think one of the most memorable you know, World Series runs, or like, you know, playoffs, was that Cubs Guardians, you know, series. I think were the Guardians up 3-1 in that, and then the Cubs came back and won it in game 7. That was really fun. And then going back to 2004, of course, with the Red Sox, they're, you know, breaking the curse in like their first of 3 championships. Those are the fun October. So that's all I gotta say.
Well said, man.
Feels good. I fucking love it, man.
As it should. It must be an incredible feeling being a Dodgers fan. I think it's for a team that has next to unlimited financial resources in baseball. The admirable thing to me about that franchise is them continuing to, you know, build through the minor leagues. And you mentioned that their style of play, like, they do the little things well in some of the fundamentals. And I think, you know, that goes to how, you know, how they do things in the minor leagues and develop players. And, you know, they're able to have, you know, a well-rounded farm system, and then hey, you know, spend $1 billion in free agency to round out and make sure they have the MVPs around the lineup. So it's tough. It's tough framing a underdog story that Rome's trying to do for a team with a $300+ million payroll. But
everyone can spend that money. It's just they're all billionaire owners, you know.
I disagree. I think the Dodgers have a lot of inherited financial advantages with their TV network that gives them extra revenue that other teams do not get that isn't part of revenue sharing. So there's a lot of built-in advantages that baseball gifted them and said the Yankees with the YES Network at the same time, too. So it's not all teams are created evil based on your billionaire owners. But it's a well-run franchise, and I won't take that away from them for what they had to do. They have underachieved in the playoffs, I think, overall. That's been the consensus. But now they have two World Series titles here, you know, within, you know, a four-year period. And, you know, they have a team kind of built to last. And when you look at the World Series overall, I don't know if you consider this an overly memorable World Series because it was only five games, but it had moments. And I think the game one grand slam walk off, we talked about it right after, like that was a moment that'll be replayed. And maybe that's the thing you remember. And then from the Yankees front, you're just going to have the disastrous fifth inning of that game that they should have won, you know, be the moment there. So I think those are the two things you'll remember from the World Series, whether it's a memorable series, I'm not sure. But I think for the Dodgers, you're going to remember it. You'll remember this like I remember the 2005 World Series with the White Sox that me and like seven other people remember.
I totally forgot they were in the World Series.
They swept the yeah. Astros. They swept the Astros.
Yeah,
fuck the Astros.
Yeah, I mean, give the Dodgers a ton of credit, man, for getting that World Series. You know, it didn't turn out to be a great World Series, looking like it had that chance. But Jason's brought it up. You know, the last week, that game one walk-off grand slam, that just took the heart out of the Yankees' soul. And then, you know, all the errors, three errors in that fifth inning. You know, like you said, Rome, Judge, no errors all season, playoffs, regular season. And that wasn't even a hard play. I mean, that was as routine as routine gets. That's day one. You're doing tryouts for Little League, and they're throwing pop flies like up to you. And, you know, Garrett Cole plate, that happens, you know, soft grounder. Rizzo doesn't want to, you know, rush in, make an error. Cole takes a bad angle. Stuff like that happens. But the Volpe throw to third base can't happen. Cole, you get 12 and two-thirds inning, one earned run, and zero wins this World Series. That's a tough pill to swallow if you're Yankees.
Yeah, tough, but he'll come back, though. He just re-signed. Went back on his old contract, and the offseason's underway.
Yeah, I don't know if we get to the offseason talk right now, but I think, you know, the Dodgers are going to be, you know, pretty well situated, but the Yankees got a lot of questions going into the offseason. Soto being the biggest one of that. I think Gleyber Torres is also a free agent, Aaron, as well, if I can remember. So, but Judge playing center field, I heard this in some of the Yankee stuff. So you sign Soto and have him in right, but putting in Judge in center field, It to me is like, do they have the right pieces? You like the bats, but Judge playing center field, I don't think that's the natural position you want him playing in. So when you re-sign Soto, do you kind of have an outfield problem where you have Stanton, you have Judge in these contracts, you want to bring Soto back for his bat, but not defensively in the outfield? I don't think you have, you know, the right configuration where this leaves a liability for the Yankees. It's, you know, not something most fans are going to talk about because they want the big bat in the lineup. But I heard, you know, I heard some New York media talking about that, whether, you know, we give Soto the, you know, this contract, because now you're putting somebody in a wrong outfield spot that leaves this team open to some vulnerabilities defensively.
Yeah, just $500 million Soto. Judge, you don't want him in center field for too long. What is he, already 32? Center field's got to be young. It's got to be your most athletic guy. I mean, don't get me wrong, Judge is.
He's pretty athletic.
Given his age, you don't want him there. Yeah. Soto,
well, not much longer.
Soto doesn't run well in the outfield. He made some stupid errors.
He doesn't run at all.
I mean, he let Freddie Freeman get a triple on a freaking 1.5 legs, man. That's how bad he takes angles of the ball in the outfield. And that's why the Padres kind of, you know, failed when they experimented with him. I would let Soto walk, but at the same time, you don't want him to go to the Dodgers and play DH and, you know, tear it up over there. So a lot of teams got some question marks going forward. We'll see what happens.
Yeah. That was good. That's good stuff. I don't know, man. I've been playing Dodger, highlights every single day. everyone from LA just keeps on reposting the same stuff. My favorite meme is they have, I don't know if you've seen this, like this little league guy. He's like running in slow motion to like home plate because he thinks like it's like some movie clip. But they put Soto's face on the little league guy and Aaron Boone trying to push him along. They're singing like that New York song, New York, New York. He's just like running slow to home
plate. It should be Stanton since he got thrown out at home plate. But yeah,
oh my god, it's so fucking good. It's so good. Well,
but we do know Aaron Boone will be back next year for the Yankees. I think that was confirmed after the World Series.
I think he should. Who else are they gonna get? Yeah.
I think Cashman's got the bigger job in the offseason of figuring out where to take this roster. Aaron, you're bringing up Soto, the Dodgers, man. That better not happen though. That's just like...
I hope not, man. I really don't. I don't want to see Soto in a Dodger uniform.
That
would go against what you've been talking about for the last week, Jason. The Dodgers like to build from within. They got Páez, Outman. They got a lot of outfielders. They don't need another outfielder. They probably need an upgrade. I mean, Lux hasn't really turned out who they thought they would be coming off that ACL injury. Rojas is old. Kiki, yeah, he makes some lucky hits here in the playoffs here and there, but he's not your full 162 game guy. So
he's been very good in the regular season.
They got some holes to fill. But
Dodgers have some guys coming up from the minor leagues this year as well, so we'll see how it goes.
They've always had a good farm system, man. I mean, that's one thing why the Dodgers and Braves, for the most part, have been good for the last 30 years.
Braves
they
really
do a
good.
Great job of developing guys in their farm system.
Braves already retooling, man. It's kind of scary.
They're going to be in the mix, man. They're going to be in the mix. Again, it comes down to health, too, man. Braves just didn't have the studs in the barn to keep up with the Dodgers this year. That's just how it goes.
Yeah. So this pod goes out tomorrow, November 5th. And then
it's a great day.
It's a great day, actually. Kind of wish the election was not tomorrow, but fuck it. It is what it is. We'll see how it goes. Political unrest, probably some another January 6th thing. Maybe we'll see Aaron there. And then
can't afford to be there, bro. Can't be on anybody's watch list.
Yeah. You know, hope not.
You know,
hope not.
I'll just say I'm a SVP Scott Van Pelt. We're Scott Van Pelt, bro.
Yeah, you could pass it to Scott Van Pelt. Fuck, that's hilarious.
I could put the glasses on.
Just the glasses on, you know.
That's it, fucking man. Great. I'll wear the glasses for the next pod or one of these times.
We'll start talking basketball.
That's Wednesday?
This upcoming week, this Wednesday, full NBA pod, and then we'll try to sprinkle it in like once every couple weeks.
Armon and Nick coming on or what?
Armon and Nick are coming on.
They're
Armon,
confirmed?
A big Celtics guy. Nick, not sure, man. But you know, if he can comp us some meals from his restaurant, that'd be great. And then, I do want to get into hockey. I've been watching hockey a lot more this year, so I'm ready to go.
I'll be going to a hockey game here pretty soon, man.
I want to go to a Penguins game. I need to catch Crosby before he's out.
I caught him last year.
Yeah. Totally forgot, Jason. That's my second hockey team. But got to be loyal to Pittsburgh.
Blackhawks on a run right now. They came and beat Southern California this weekend. So, you know.
They did. Yeah. Caught the game the other day. But fuck, man. Great baseball season. Fucking great baseball season.
Great fucking baseball season. Great Formula One season.
Great Formula One. Oh, yeah. Dude, what happened to Formula? I'm sorry, dude. I didn't catch Sam Powell. I was hanging out with my daughter. And by the way, we're watching the Bears game. And I'm like, dude, Jason's not going to be happy about it. She's like, oh, Jason's not going to be happy about the Bears? You know, she's like mocking me. Talking about the Bears. She's like, they're not good, Daddy. I'm like, oh, don't tell Jason.
Even she
that.
Knows, man. Even she knows.
She was watching
man.
The game.
Who is her team? Or does she just, you know, whoever wins week to week, that's who she goes
I don't
for.
Know who her team's yet. I've been trying to like the Steelers. I bought her a jersey. Right? She doesn't want to wear it.
Did you buy her a terrible towel?
No, I got to buy one.
There you go, man.
But when we're at the Dodger Festival thing, they're like, oh, who's your favorite team? She would not say the Dodgers. She just kept on saying Lakers. Lakers are my team. Lakers are my team. I'm like, well, thank God she got one of the fucking LA teams, because I'm so worried that she's going to be a Giants fan. We go
if
to
she
so
said
many Giants,
Giants
games.
Would you leave her there?
Hey, at least for Rome, he's got like 20 favorite teams around there, so he just can just throw them all out. Hopefully one sticks to be a favorite here.
Well, it's my fault. You know, I take her to like a dozen or so Giants games, and we've been to like a dozen or so.
Well, you live in the city, Warriors games. Dude. So you might as well, go to those games.
Know, it's so easy to go in and out. You know, the tickets are relatively cheap.
It's nice fun. Stadium too. One of my favorites.
Yeah, it's great. I love it. Anyways, don't know yet. Don't know what her football team is yet. But yeah, she's just only rooting for the winners. She's like, oh, Dad, the red team's up 17-10, whatever, you know. We'll see how it goes. Anything else to talk about, or is that it?
I'm good.
Apologize to everybody that we couldn't get on the pod last week to do Lions on Thursday. Lots of stuff going on behind the scenes, but we'll be back on this week for NBA pod this week as well for Lions on Thursday to be airing on Friday. Catch us on X, on Instagram, Jason, Aaron, Rome, Source from the Sofa Podcast. Catch us next time.